is CLNS Radio, the home of Internet Sports Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the CLNS Media Boston Celtics postgame show. I am your host for the evening, Nick Sacento, and I'll be joined shortly by my man, Joe Chiquette, one of the finest CLNS Media has to offer, to help me break down all of the action from tonight's 112-103 Boston Celtics victory over the Memphis Grizzlies. That's right. The Boston Celtics get back in the win column tonight in game two of their three-game West Coast road trip by defeating the Memphis Grizzlies in their own stadium, FedEx Forum, 112-103, on the back of some late-game heroics by none other than the man himself, the man right here, Kyrie Irving. 26 points, 13 assists, and most of it done, practically all of it, I think, but 4 or 5 points done in the second half, particularly in the fourth quarter, leading the Celtics, who seem to be flailing, falling into one of those chuck-up-the-three, first-look, minimal passing shots. Just one of those droughts that they occasionally go into when Kyrie Irving took the reins and attacked the basket and led the Boston Celtics back from what would be a 19-point deficit in Memphis. Late-game heroics also by one of the other men right here, Marcus Morris, 22 points, 4 rebounds, 7 for 13 shooting, 4 for 9 from 3, including some clutch shots. That pull-up, whatever it is, that fadeaway where he just looks at his defender in the eye and either pulls up for the shot or does that little fadeaway, and there's nothing his defender can do about it, and it goes right in, especially one late where it kind of bounced off it. Like, it just did its little dance on the rim before falling down and into the basket, and you could hear the audible groan, at least on the NBC Sports Boston stream that I was listening to. You could hear an audible groan from the Grizzlies fans, and before a cheer from the large contingency, I should say, of Boston Celtics fans in FedEx Forum in Memphis, Tennessee tonight. But the man I want to mention, having a fantastic game since coming back from injury, much maligned because of the money that he makes, frequently called average by both fans and detractors alike, on minutes restriction, Al Horford making the most of those restricted minutes, 18 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. It seemed like Brad Stevens kept him out of the game as long as he could until putting him back in, and boy, Al Horford, average Al Horford, 3 huge 3-point shots, clutch dagger 3-point shots from Al Horford. So if we were handing out helmet stickers, if this was football, for those of you that are watching the college football playoffs and Alabama and Clemson punch their tickets to the Redneck Bowl another year, if we were handing out helmet stickers to our players, Kyrie Irving, Marcus Morris, Al Horford would get those helmet stickers tonight, would get those MVP trophies for their performances tonight in a game that really seemed like the Boston Celtics, they had it under control in the first quarter, then lost control of the game in the second quarter and even into the third, falling down, as I mentioned, by a 19-point deficit, just looking like they were completely disinterested in the game, and managing to find themselves about midway, just a little bit less than midway through the fourth quarter, just decided, hey, we're going to turn on, we're going to hit the switch, we're going to play some Boston Celtics basketball and just ran away with this game in front of a Memphis crowd that, like I said, had a significant contingency of Boston Celtics fans, but who were cheering and even chanting "Let's go Celtics" audibly over the NBC Sports Boston broadcast, and I'm sure it was audible over the Memphis broadcast, because I believe the footage is a pool footage, is audible to all fans watching the game on television. So the Memphis Grizzlies controlling this game for, I would say, most of this game, 2.5 quarters at least, if not 3 quarters, 2.5 quarters, and until the Boston Celtics hit the switch, came in and snatched victory from the jaws of defeat, 112-103, and much of those 9 points, much of that 9-point spread, free throws at the end of the game. But as I mentioned, Kyrie Irving, 26 points, 22 from Marcus Morris, and 18 from old man Al. Fantastic game from those starters. And, of course, the obligatory Marcus Smart doing Marcus Smart things, to quote Brian Scalabrine, and I think to quote many of us, we said that phrase probably a million times watching Marcus Smart over these past 4-plus years in green. And I'll tell you, I haven't always been a fan of Marcus Smart. It seems that Terry Rozier this year is doing the things that Marcus Smart used to do that I didn't like. Those pull-up threes early in the shot clock that, you know, just aren't falling and just keep chucking. Marcus Smart is staying in his lane, earning his $13 million a year, and making Marcus Smart plays every single game, doing it more consistently without really hurting the Celtics with bad shots and endless turnovers, as he has done in years past with much improved Marcus Smart. And as many of us on the CLNS Media Boston Celtics postgame show have mentioned, the addition of Marcus Smart and Marcus Morris into this starting lineup has been a revolution, a revelation, both a revolution and a revelation for this 2018-2019 Boston Celtics team, who have just really turned around their season despite a few road bumps and even some recent road bumps, including a road bump a couple of nights ago in Houston that was a winnable game. But again, a game where the Boston Celtics just let the game get out of control early, and against a team like the Rockets, didn't have enough, you know, fuel. Get it, rocket fuel? Didn't have enough fuel to come back and win that game. But against a team like the Memphis Grizzlies, who were not a terrible team, surprisingly not, you know, the worst of teams this year, coming into the game with the 18-16 record, which is decent in the Western Conference, put them just 0.5 games behind Sacramento for the 8th seed, and you'll have to forgive my voice. I'm a little bit under the weather. Apparently, things do happen down here in Florida. We may avoid some of the cold weather, but we don't avoid the cold disease. We're not impervious to everything. But the Grizzlies, decent record in the Western Conference. Like I mentioned, only a half game behind the Sacramento Kings for 8th place in the West coming into this game, although only winning 3 of their last 9 against the Boston Celtics. Just to, you know, sum up basically where these teams were coming into this game, a record of 20-14 for the Celtics, which is good for 5th place in the East, which is where they've been for a little while now, winning just 2 of their last 6 games after an 8-game winning streak earlier in the month. So the Boston Celtics hitting a little bit of, you know, skids recently, but, you know, nothing too out of the ordinary. Again, still growing pains. Just because they had an 8-game winning streak doesn't mean they was going to win the rest of their games from that point out. Boston Celtics improving to 21-14 after a 112-103 victory over the Memphis Grizzlies in Memphis. And at this point, I would like to take a breath and remind everybody listening right now that this is a live call-in show. Once the action on the court ends, the excitement on the CLNS Media Airwaves begins. If you'd like to join the conversation, as I see some of you, West Coast Jerry, that means you, lighting up on my switchboard, the toll-free Boston Barber and Tattoo Company call lines is 347-215-7771. And you can join me live on the CLNS Media Boston Celtics postgame show by dialing that number. Once again, it's 347-215-7771, toll-free, won't cost you a penny. And once you hear the automated operator, you can dial 1 on your touch tone pads or 1 on your rotary phones, if you're old school like that, to join the conversation. Once again, 347-215-7771, and I will be joined shortly by my man Joe Chiquette, who it appears has just lit up on my switchboard. So we'll be getting to Joe Chiquette, one of my favorite hosts here at CLNS Media, as soon as I read you this opening read from our sponsors. This show, just like every show this season, is sponsored by Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Every neighborhood has a heartbeat, a place that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core, because if the neighborhood didn't have a heartbeat, it'd probably be dead. You thought I was going to skip that joke this time, didn't you? No, I didn't. Every neighborhood has a heartbeat, a place that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core. In Boston's historic North End, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company has become home to A-list Boston celebrities like Gordon Hayward, Milan Lucic, Brad Marchand, and Aaron Baines. And I believe our host, our co-host for the evening, Joe Chiquette, has something to say about Aaron Baines' look on the bench tonight as he sits out with, I believe, a broken hand. Aaron Baines looking sharp, as they say, up in Boston on the bench tonight, in part due to Boston Barber Tattoo, who cuts his incredible faded man bun. Boston Barber Tattoo Company, is more than just Boston's most well-known corner barbershop. It's also a tourist attraction for the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people that visit the North End throughout the year. Boston Barber Tattoo Company, a North End landmark that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core. So if you want a Gordon Hayward slick hipster comb over, or the aforementioned faded man bun like the Aussie, the man who impresses broadcast co-host in the locker room, Aaron Baines, make sure to hit up Boston Barber Tattoo Company, located at 113 Salem Street on the north end of Boston. It is the heartbeat and the epicenter of the North End and its core. And with that, I'm going to throw to my man, who I believe is Joe Chiquette, looks like his area code. I have him saved in my cell phone as Joe Chiquette, so I don't see his number every single time we engage in texts during games. And sometimes my flip phone network fails me, so I don't even get the text. Joe Chiquette, come and save me while I take a drink of water, because as you may have heard, I'm under the weather. I sound like a bullfrog right now. What did you think about the game? I didn't see you on the switchboard as I was doing the quote-unquote brief synopsis at the beginning of the show, but I know you have your own opinions about the Boston Celtics, but needless to say, great come from, well, we shouldn't say great come from behind win. Gritty come from behind win, a game the Celtics were disinterested for what seemed like three quarters of the game, and just decided at the end of the game in the fourth quarter to come back and snatch this one from the Memphis Grizzlies like it wasn't nothing. What did you think, Joe?
Nick, always a pleasure to be on. Thank you. Yeah, I'm having some technical difficulties, so I couldn't go on my really good studio mic. So you get me as a caller tonight, but that's okay. Couple of things.
Still
right
sounds better than my
bat.
Phone. I don't have really good studio equipment. I actually do, but it's attached to other things that I used for nightclub DJing back when I was a nightclub DJ in my former life. And it doesn't seem to want to interface very well with the computer, especially not the one that I'm using right now. I'm on the trash Windows. I don't have the MacBook at the moment, so I understand. We all have technical issues, but I would like to be able to use a studio quality mic. But you know what? You sound good, Joe. You always sound good. You always sound good when you're on the airwaves with me on the CLNS Media Boston Celtics postgame show. It's the 18th tonight, Joe. So come from behind win. I know you were mad about the game for a little while in the text before my network dropped. but how did you feel about that comeback? It just seemed like Kyrie Irving, Marcus Morris, Al Horford can just hit that switch when they want to. And against teams like the Memphis Grizzlies, at least, the hitting that switch seems to work, even though they fall down by 19 points because they just can't seem to be interested in the game for the first three quarters.
Yeah, the overriding theme tonight, Nick, was luck. That team that showed up in the first half of this game and on both sides, you know, whether it was Memphis or the Celtics, one team was hungry for the win and was playing like it. The other team had no answers. And then in the second half, it was like the script got flipped. And I want to say it's a la Belichick halftime adjustments for the Patriots sort of type of thing. But I think what really happened was what you typically see in the NBA, cream rises. Do I like the way they won the game? No. Will I take the W? Every day that ends in Y. It was good to get the W. It was good to see Kyrie go off and just they had no answers for him. I mean, at some point, Conley just kind of threw his hands up and went, this guy's on another level right now. But I thought overall, first half of that game, Marc Gasol was playing like the old Paul Gasol was playing back in the day. He couldn't miss. He was a beast. The second he got in the paint and defense collapsed on him, he seemed to find the open right guy each time, or he just used that baby hook each and every time over a very undersized Tice. And to be honest with you, early in that game, Al had no answers for Gasol either. So it was good to see the second half cream rise to the top, so to speak. You mentioned it. Morris had a game for himself. Kyrie had a Kyrie game. And it was nice to see Al come in with 18, and those were loud, too. You know, there were no quiet 18s out of Al tonight. So I enjoyed watching the second half of that game, but you're right, my man. Not only was I texting you, I had eight other people on a group text that I was screaming to about, you know, what am I watching? This isn't good basketball.
Testing
this
out material for the show.
Basketball. Oh, my gosh. And then they just crushed. They took it to the next level. They chipped away. I mean, I'm a very superstitious guy, so when they're down that deep, I keep walking in and out of the living room. So I'd walk in, they'd be down 19, I'd walk out, I'd walk back in. It was 17, then 15, then 13, and then the run went. When Memphis went dead quiet, I think they went almost full minutes without scoring a hoop. You just saw that entire lead erode. You could feel the momentum shift towards the Celtics. And at the end of the day, like I said, I'll take the W. I just didn't like the way they went towards getting it.
Well, listen, the Boston Celtics can't, you know, pull this type of crap, you know, in the playoffs, definitely. And it's not going to win them very many games against teams that, you know, that are competitive. I mean, I know the Memphis Grizzlies having, you know, not being too far out of the, you know, the race, the hunt for the playoffs, if we're going to talk about playoffs this early in the season. A relatively, you know, for a bottom seed, you know, they're not the worst team. And I think that they have, you know, certain... they give the Celtics certain matchup issues that they can exploit, as you mentioned, you know, Marc Gasol, you know, turning back the clock there with, you know, some pretty nice moves, punishing, you know, the Celtics in the paint. I guess I'll make the obligatory Time Lord reference. I guess Time Lord got left behind in Maine and didn't make the trip to the Western Conference because, you know, and to be honest, I really think that, you know, the Celtics could have used a little bit of his presence, you know, in these past couple of games. The way they got beat, they've been getting beaten up in the paint. I mean, the rebounds weren't, you know, that lopsided tonight. Again, as the Celtics, you know, started to, you know, actually pay attention to the game, because this was completely a game where, you know, there was just no motivation. I don't know. I really think this team, you know, believed its own hype and got, you know, high off, in some instances, got high off its own aroma, you know, coming into the season, because there's just situations where they look like they couldn't be less interested in playing the game on the court, and where they just settle for those first look shots, where they settle for, you know, pull up 3-point shots, where they, you know, settle for pull up, you know, mid range shots, where they just settle for, you know, just settle, don't get those hustle plays. I mean, against the Rockets, they got completely obliterated by Clint Capella, and that was what really made me think
right.
of the Robert Williams, you know, reference right now. But then a rebound to watch, you know, Michael Conley get a rebound sitting on the floor. I mean, those are things that just, you know, make you want to, you know, rip your hair out as a Boston Celtics fan. Excuse me. Those are the things the Boston Celtics normally do to other teams. And then this recent stretch where they just haven't really – and that's an issue of motivation. But I think the Boston Celtics, again, they turned it on. It worked against the Memphis Grizzlies. I think it was a display more so of what the Celtics can do when they're actually, you know, focused. When they're focused, man, as opposed to, you know, being detached from the game. But this is not going to work against – elite teams, definitely. So this would never work against the Milwaukee Bucks. Should never work against the Toronto
Absolutely
Raptors.
Not.
This type of thing would never work against teams that they're going to need to beat, and probably on the road if they keep playing around like this, you know, for the rest of the season, kind of, you know, a few games above 500, but not really breaking out into, you know, the top, you know, 4, 3, 2 seeds as we expect them to do, and just kind of, you know, playing down to their opponents. But it worked tonight, and I think it did show something about these Boston Celtics. I think you can you know, there's some information, some, you know, kind of, you know, stuff to store in the back of your mind about this team based on this type of gritty comeback win, a 19-point comeback win, 112-103 in Memphis on the road, you know, second game of a three-game Western Conference road stretch. I think the San Antonio Spurs are not anywhere. I think they're a terrible team this year record-wise. But the Rockets and the Memphis Grizzlies are both, you know, teams trying to make the playoffs this season. So, you know, a reasonable road trip for the Celtics. And I said, like you said, any day of the week that ends in Y, give us that W. Give us that W.
Absolutely. And just to quickly touch on Robert Williams, I mean, everything I read today said that he's up there because of the knee soreness, and that's why they're holding him out, and he won't be available for the rest of the trip. So it's a bit of a bummer to not have him out there because he's had so much early success so far in his NBA career, and any experience he can get on the court will help him down the road. So, yeah, anytime you get a guy missing out of a lineup and specifically not even traveling with the team, it's something to at least keep an eye on, follow up a little bit. On going back to another injury, you got Baines, and you know, you mentioned it sparingly when you did your open tonight, but I'll expand on it a little bit. I was going back and forth with Nick during the game, and they kept doing cut shots to Baines on the bench. And the first thing, and I'll be the first one to tell you, Taylor McLeod's always out there telling people he's a 20-year-old basketball fan, and he only knows winning with the Boston sports, and I get that. But I'm an old bastard. I'm a 45-year-old guy who's lived through the New England sports trivia history for my entire life. So I can tell you that with that age also comes a lot of cheesy television references. So the second I saw Baines in the light gray shirt with the flamingo pink T-shirt on underneath, immediately went to Sonny Crockett from Miami Vice. Dude was rocking the Miami vibe tonight in Memphis. It was definitely an interesting wardrobe choice for him. But like you said, his lettuce is always fresh because he's going to Boston Barber and Tattoo, getting that thing all done up nice for him. But, man, the outfit choice tonight, I don't know. Maybe you shouldn't allow Kyrie to dress you when he's blindfolded because Uncle Drew did him no favors tonight.
I've always been a Rico Tubbs guy myself. If Aaron Baines would have showed up with a Jerry curl, I would have been more impressed, you know. But
right?
Let his soul glow. But you know, it's always nice to see these guys and let their personality out when they're on the bench. I mean, it's not like he's doing anything for the next few weeks. So you know, you get the Aaron Baines.
No, he's now known as the saucy Aussie.
The saucy. Well, I mean, he's been known as the saucy Aussie ever since he caught the eye of Tommy Heinsohn in the locker room last season.
Right.
So I guess when you get that type of feedback live on the air, that type of commentary about your masculinity live on the air, you can pretty much wear whatever it is you want when you're on the bench, and
yes,
nobody's really going to question anything. You know, so there you go, Aaron Baines. I mean, he's always worth the reference. I like Aaron Baines. I think he's a solid addition to the Celtics, and you can see that he's missing, you know, some of that grit. There's, you know, there's three guys that really give you that
time.
Grit on this team, and he's one of them, Marcus Morris being the other, and of course Marcus Smart being the definition of Boston grit. But Aaron Baines is, you know, one of those guys, and you know, he's never afraid to set a hard pick, never afraid to you know, to do the what we used to call garbage men, I guess, is what it used to be when I was a kid. They used to call those type of players garbage men. They could, you know, grab some stats occasionally and, you know, do those things, but do the things that nobody else, you know, wants to do. The finesse guys. Kyrie Irving is
absolutely
definitely a finesse guy. Don't want to do.
But
can Kyrie Irving hit? The shots that Kyrie Irving is able to hit. There was that one Jason Tatum kick out pass. It was almost like it looked like a crazy pass. It was like a real high arcing pass that went to Kyrie from one of those practically, I guess, you know, a little bit more than quarter, whatever it is, almost half court, you know, logos, NBA logos or sponsor logos. And Kyrie just, you know, bang. It's not as pretty a shot as it doesn't have the arc that, you know, Steph Curry does. But, I mean, he has the range. And, I mean, he's getting to where he's almost, you know, as automatic, especially since I don't think that, you know, the Warriors have been as impressive this season. But Kyrie Irving, and then his ability to finish at the hoop with, you know, he's termed the jelly. You know what I'm saying? His ability to kind of like, you know, contort his body to get to other sides of the basket. Even Marcus Smart, you know, and I've always said, I've been saying since last season when Kyrie got here that, you know, everybody's handles have kind of improved since Kyrie Irving got to this team because, you know, he's just one of these guys that's really for, like, you know, young sports fans, I guess sports fans, you know, of the of some of our co-hosts, you know, generation. He's really the guy. You know what I mean? I mean, even for, you know, for me, a guy in his, you know, mid-30s, I really appreciate his game. I love guys with game like that. But it seems like everybody's kind of picked up their handling just a little bit since working with Kyrie. And Marcus Smart had one shot, I believe, in the first half. He had a breakaway fast break. You know, a fast break, you know, basically he and, you know, his man, you know, a few steps behind him. And, you know, he could have easily, like he would in years past, have pulled up and waited for everybody to come and be like, no, Marcus, go to the basket. And, you know, hitting a, you know, reverse layup off the glass at full speed. I mean, just, you know, totally, you know, beautiful right. move for Marcus Smart, something you wouldn't expect. It just seems like, you know, some of that stuff, some of that jelly, the handles, the angles on the shots, you know, Kyrie Irving has had, you know, a ripple effect, especially with some of the younger players on this team. Terry Rozier last year really looked like, you know, he was getting some of those handles as well. Not that he's necessarily been impressive, you know, unfortunately this season, but, you know, Kyrie Irving's influence isn't just what things like he did tonight, you know, where he takes over a game. Kyrie Irving's influence, you know, is absolutely in the locker room. It's in practice. It's in influencing the style of these guys' entire games. And especially now that I think that he's picked up his defense, I think that a lot of that is going to, you know, reverberate as well to where this team, because when they wanted to crank down, it wasn't just offensively, they cranked down defensively. As you mentioned, the Memphis Grizzlies went 5 minutes there in the fourth quarter without scoring. I mean, so it wasn't just an offensive outburst that, you know, propelled these Celtics. It was defense that led to that offense, because most of those baskets came from incredible defensive possessions.
Absolutely. I mean, everybody on the planet knows that I'm a huge Marcus Smart fan, just because he's the antithesis of a Boston sports fan's ideal player. It's just grit, heart on the sleeve, balls out for the entire length of a game, and OT if it has to go that far too. He's that kind of player. But to your point, this year specifically, his handle on the ball, his touch at the cup seems next level for him, which I wanted to see out of him coming into this
yes.
season. You know, it a constant growth of a player. So I'm seeing that with him. And yes, he was actor specifically in the second half tonight. I mean, he had a quiet 8 points for the whole game. I think he was 1 for 3 from behind the arc, but he was defensively all over that ball when they needed it. You know, when you needed that clutch defensive stop, it was Marcus Smart somewhere in the thick of it. If he wasn't making the ideal play, he was off to the side setting that play up. One of the things that I thought the Celtics struggled with in the first half was, and I texted you, I said, the paint's closed tonight. You know, the extra pass open threes were wide open. They just weren't dinging them down tonight early on, but they were open. The paint was closed, and they kept trying to, and I found Kyrie's game early on was more trying to facilitate. He was trying to get the ball, get it into the lane, and then kick out and find the open guy. He wasn't really scoring focused early on. And I think either at half or right before half, Brad must have said something to him, or it was just game awareness. We realized, all right, this isn't working for us tonight. You know, I've got to actually step up. I've got to drop 26 on this team and see what happens. And then it just became, the second half was basically the Kyrie show, specifically the last 8 minutes of that game. And it was fun to watch, because to your point, he is a next level player in this league. He can turn it on. He can take over a game. You don't want him doing that on a nightly basis. You want other contributors coming in. And tonight you got a nice game from Marcus Morris, which was nice to see as well. I mean, this guy's numbers year over year are on the way up again this year, which is great to see. And like I mentioned earlier, Al gave you a great game, good solid game all the way through. Where I wanted to see more from this team tonight was I wanted to see a little bit more from Tatum. I wanted to see a little bit more from Brown. I thought Tice had a horrible mismatch against Gasol, and they made sure that they exploited that each and every time that they could. And I thought Terry did okay. You know, 7 points, 18 minutes. It wasn't, you know, wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. It was vanilla pudding out of Terry Rozier tonight, and I can deal with vanilla pudding in January, in late December from him.
Yeah, he doesn't have to impress anybody with the sprinkles, I guess, but I just was looking at the 1-for-4 from three, and especially two of those shots at least that were, you know, late in the game where, you know, there are just certain times, and as I said in the beginning of the show, not sure if you caught it or not, but there's just certain times it seems like it's a pattern or a theme where the Celtics are, you know, in reach, the game is in reach, and then all of a sudden they just sit there and become content to just chuck jump shots, and even when the jump shots aren't falling, and I don't think they had a terrible shooting night tonight. No, they didn't. They shot 50% from the field overall, 40 for 80, and 44% from three, which is fantastic, 44.5 almost, 16 for 36 from three, which is, you know, great, and they did get to the line at least 18 free throws is reasonable for them for a team that doesn't generally get to the line because they don't generally attack the basket like they did tonight. You know, they just get into these ruts where they just settle for first look shots, for, you know, jump shots, and occasionally, you know, they're not always bad looks, but sometimes they're not, you know, great looks or good looks or the best looks that they can get because they're early in the shot clock. And occasionally they're, if not contested, there's somebody there. You know, it's not like one of those wide open shots where, you know, they have all day to think about it. There's somebody that's right behind them that just got, you know, nicked on one of those, you know, those quick screens or one of those, you know, handoffs that they frequently do. You know, Kyrie loves to take those shots off a handoff where the man handing off picks the defender off of him and then shooting, you know, basically from right behind or right to the, you know, side of the when his teammate that does the handing off, often a guy like Al Horford, for example, and love to take those shots.
Sure.
And, you know, Terry doing those similar things. And I think that in a game situation like that, the Celtics would do better attacking the basket. And that's exactly what Kyrie Irving did tonight when he turned it on. That's exactly what Marcus Morris did tonight. Even when Marcus Morris, you know, did those pull-up shots, you know, closer to the basket, there were still shots that, you know, that were higher percentage shots, and especially, you know, the shots after Marcus Morris had already made a move to the basket. So, you know, that's what you want to see from the Celtics as opposed to getting content with, you know, the 3 points. Sometimes I think, you know, you just live and die too much, and the team needs to understand when to, you know, when that's what they, you know, when that's what they should be doing, you know, and that's most of the game, and when they need to get to the cup, when they need to force the action, and they need to force the whistles. Because some of those things, you know, those are the type of things that can win you games. And when you, are, you know, aren't getting to the line and when you aren't exploiting, you know, the abilities of a guy like Kyrie Irving to finish, you know, at the paint. And other players, you know, Jason Tatum can finish at the paint, in the paint, at the rim. Jaylen Brown can finish in the paint, at the rim. Terry Rozier can finish. Marcus Smart, like we just mentioned, is, you know, showing some signs of, you know, of life where, you know, I used to ask for 4 years on this show, tell me Marcus Smart's go-to offensive move. Nobody can tell me. He doesn't have one. I mean, he's a decent, you know, post-up guy on guys that are, you know, about his size. You know, he can. He has that, you know, that low center of gravity. But, you know, he's actually finishing in the paint now. There are times when they need to be more aggressive, and I think that, you know, tonight they did that. In some games, they don't, and that's where things get, you know, can get messy for the Celtics, and where they're going to just have to learn, you know, there are times to, you know, to be aggressive and, you know, and times to, you know, do that, to do the motions, to get the motions, to get those nice, open, wide open perimeter shots. Once again, Joe, just like to remind the audience, the Boston Celtics won 112 to 103 tonight in Memphis after overcoming a 19-point deficit, 26 points, and 13 assists from Kyrie Irving, 18 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists from Al Horford, including 2 clutch 3-pointers, 22 points, 4 rebounds for Marcus Morris, and, of course, Marcus Smart with the hustle plays. It didn't really show up all that big in the box score. It looks like 8 points. Is that 4 steals that I'm looking at? Of course, my equipment isn't working for me right now. 4 steals. Solid game for Marcus Smart, you know, intangible game. Daniel Tice, I think we can put to rest, Joe, the comment that Daniel Tice has never had a bad game in the NBA. I think tonight was, you know, in the game in Houston, those were two not very good games, if we're not going to say bad. Good game, though, from Gordon Hayward, 14 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds, 6 for 11 shooting, even though only 1 for 4 from deep. He did hit a critical one, I think, at a pretty, you know, reasonable juncture that, you know, made his 3-point shooting worth it. Nice game from Gordon Hayward. This is one of those games, doesn't totally jump out at you, but it gives you encouragement for Gordon Hayward moving forward. I'm going to run a commercial and hit the car lines. Anything else that you'd like to add about the analysis from the game before we pay some bills and get to the callers that are lighting up?
Yeah, and I'll even – absolutely, and I'll even help us pay a bill a little bit, because I'll say that everybody's favorite hipster comb-over from Boston Barber and Tattoo had a decent game tonight. I mean, I view Gordon Hayward as a train moving up the tracks on a steep mountain. You know, it's a slow go, but – he's, you know, I think I can. Eventually he's going to get to the top of the mountain and we're all going to be thrilled. So I'm looking for, and I think I mentioned it last time you and I did a show, Nick, I'm looking for incremental improvements from Gordon Hayward. And I'm not measuring it game to game. I'm measuring it week over week, and then 2 week over 2 week, 3 week over 3 week. I'm looking for incremental advances in his game coming back, and I'm seeing them. And so I have nothing to rip Gordon about. You know, obviously would I like him to go a little bit better than 1 for 4 from behind the arc? Sure. Cause almost all of those shots were absolutely uncontested, wide open, good angle shots, from behind the arc. I would have liked to see more than one go down, but I'll take it. 6 for 11 from the field. I'll take that. I mean, some of them were good. He had that nice dunk finish. I just thought he had a solid game. You know, as long as he's kind of like an umpire in baseball. If I don't know that you're there, you had a decent game right now. So I didn't really, you know, Gordon Hayward didn't really put a stamp on this game, and I'm okay with that. I'll watch the stat line. I know what my eyes saw during the game. I look at it as continued incremental growth moving forward. Now let's go pay some bills, my man.
Fantastic. That's why you're the Cy Young pitcher of the CLNS media staff, the CLNS media family. and I hear you've got the card to prove it. I just need to see with my own eyes. Unfortunately, my phone doesn't accept multimedia, or I'd have that one as the background, the wallpaper of my cell phone.
Card. Don't worry.
Absolutely. And with that, we'll pay some bills. The Boston Celtics, again, 112 to 103. Feel free to dial us, 347-215-7771 on the toll-free call lines. Make sure to jump in after we get to these bills. And right now, we're going to hit you with the Nick Sesento, Jimmy Toscano, Boston Barber and Tattoo Company Read Contest.
Every neighborhood has a heartbeat, a place that represents what being home is all about. In Boston's historic North End, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company has become home to A-list celebrities like Gordon Hayward, Brad Marchand, Milan Lucic, Aaron Baines, and the list goes on over the years. It's more than just Boston's most well-known corner barbershop. It's a spot to catch up while getting lined up. And it's also a tourist attraction for the hundreds of thousands of people that visit the North End throughout the year. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company, a North End landmark that represents the epicenter of the neighborhood at its core. Located at 113 Salem Street.
Welcome back, everybody, to the CLNS Media Boston Celtics post-game show. Boston Celtics winning tonight 112-103 over the Memphis Grizzlies in the second game of their three-game Western Conference road trip, bouncing back after losing to the Houston Rockets just 2 nights ago. Big game from Kyrie Irving, 26 points, 13 assists, Al Horford, 18 points, 6 rebounds, Marcus Morris, 22 points. Gordon Hayward, 14 points off the bench on 6-for-11 shooting. Good night from Gordon Hayward. The Memphis Grizzlies, pretty well-rounded game for their team, gave the Boston Celtics fits, 19-point lead, dominated most of the game. I'd say at least 2.5 quarters of this game were dominated by the Memphis Grizzlies, with the Boston Celtics trailing. 26 points for Michael Conley, having a fantastic game for the Grizzlies. 15 points and 10 assists for Marc Gasol. Don't even remember the dude's name. Jackson, 15 points, 4 rebounds. I can't remember half of these. And Brooks, not Marshawn, but the other Brooks, 19 points for the Grizzlies. I'm having even a hard time remembering the Memphis Grizzlies' names. And with that, we're going to go to the toll-free call lines, 347-215-7771, to a loyal caller who is calling us this early out there where he's calling from. It's only 8, quarter past 8. West Coast Jerry, loyal caller, frequent caller, always checking us out after every single game. We appreciate the love, Jerry. What's up? What did you see in this game aside from a completely disinterested Boston Celtics team for the first 3 quarters until they decided to flip that switch, especially Kyrie Irving, Marcus Morris, and Al Horford, who've gotten a lot of love tonight, Marcus Smart on the defensive end. What did you see, Jerry?
Hey, first of all, peace and salvation to the Celtics Nation. Messiah loves you. It's a season for love and good feelings and good vibes amongst the family. And I'm enjoying listening to you guys, Joe and Nick. Honestly, it's like therapy for me to listen to the CLNS Media post-game show for the Boston Celtics. Like I said last time I called, I like following the Celtics. I like being a fan of the Celtics. Not a fanatic. I'm a fan. And guess what? That is the mightiest, strongest basketball franchise and club that has ever existed on this planet and that will ever exist. So let me just say that.
Dang.
And I love your show.
17
yes.
banners.
And I'm in-
17 banners.
Yep.
The
yep.
Los Angeles
and
Lakers only have 11. The Los Angeles Lakers only have
that's
11
right.
banners. The Los Angeles
Nick,
Lakers. I don't know about
Nick,
Minneapolis,
you,
but
bro.
Boston doesn't claim anybody else's. Boston doesn't claim
nope.
any other city's banners. All those 17 banners are the Boston Celtics. Now, the Los Angeles Lakers, they have 11 banners. I know there's a few
hey.
Others from Minneapolis, but, I mean, does anybody
that's
in
right.
Los Angeles actually get hype about what Minneapolis won, Jerry?
No, bro. Everybody over here is just a Kobe on his nuts kind of deal. But you know what? I'm not going to lie to you guys. Hey, listen, I'm not going to lie to you guys. I didn't watch the game. I was at a bar. I was handling some business, and they had a Mighty Ducks game. They had a national championship or whatever, Alabama, Oklahoma, and they had the UFC. And I'm like, put the Celtics game. I want to see the middle of the third quarter. And I didn't see it. So I'm not going to give you guys no analysis, but I'm gonna tell you something that I just in my gut that I'm feeling, okay? And this is what it is. The thing is, this team right now, we're going to lose Aron Baynes. We're going to lose Daniel Theis. We're going to lose Marcus Morris. All these guys are going to get paid, and they're going to get offered some money from another club. More than likely, because Kyrie is an MVP candidate, he's balling like he's the best point guard in the league. I just said it. He's balling that way. I know he's injured.
Well, one of fewer point guards in the league, John Wall, missing the rest of the season, just to break in with some recent
wow.
NBA news, Eastern Conference news, with heel surgery that'll take him about 6 months to recover. So John Wall out of the running for best point guard in the NBA, and I think when he comes back, he's gonna, you know, he's a guy. This is, you know, he's on the other side of his prime, or you know, just around there. So you know, John Wall, tough hit for John Wall, and it kind of puts the Wizards in a tough spot.
He was never in that list, Nick. But besides that, we're gonna lose all our good role players. I'm telling you, Rozier could walk, Baynes is gonna walk. Tice is going to walk. Morris is going to walk. They're going to get paid. And Horford can opt out. The guys, Bobby and them, were talking about that. But Horford probably opt in because he's going to get paid about in the mid-20s million. So he'd have to get offered $40 million.
Nobody else is giving out Horford that money.
Right. So, like I said before, I said on the show a lot of times, Danny Ainge, let it ride. We had one problem when we played the Houston Rockets. The Houston Sprockets, by the way. Because James Harden, goddamn, I fear that guy, Nick. I fear James Harden, that son of a gun, when he does
you
that
should.
Step back. They are front runners. The Houston Rockets are front runners. When they got the lead, man, it seems like the three.
He's MVP,
isn't
he? He won MVP last year.
And the Celtics fell into that trap. It seems like the Celtics forgot about just locking down on D, driving to the hoop, getting your foul shots. And they started chucking threes like the Rockets did. So the 3-point shot is a double-edged sword. And we're not – we take – I think we're top 3 in the league in taking the three. And it's just a dangerous shot. This season is a weird season, man. I don't know what to tell you. I told you guys when I called you, Nick, and I'm gonna listen to you guys after I'm done talking and listen to the rest of the show. I'm enjoying it, but I told you guys after we get through this holiday, a few tough matches that tough teams, we're gonna know what this team is all about. We lost to Houston, we beat Memphis. They're a tough squad, and in the next few games, we're gonna see what this team is all about. There's six more games, and then we're gonna be halfway through the season. Then we're gonna know what this team is all about. But I'm telling you, Danny Ainge, I'm telling the Celtics Nation, we got the material. We got the squad. We're 10 deep. Injuries happen to every team. The Golden State Warriors are teetering. LeBron James is hurt. Rondo's hurt. I'm telling you, it's an open NBA. Danny Ainge,
LeBron's
let it ride. Hey, Danny Ainge, let it ride. We got some dogs on this team. We got Junkyard Dogs. I like Rozier. I like Al Horford. I like all the guys on the squad. There's not one guy on the squad that I don't have faith in. And I'm saying that because I'm a fan and all that, but because I see how these guys got heart and they got guts. And guess what? All the hosts on CLNS Media, man, I'm feeling real good. It's the holidays. I love you guys. It's therapy listening to the show. It's great to have just a guys talk, watching the game and listen to you guys. I didn't watch the game, but listen to you guys talk about it. I feel like I watched the game. You feel me? So I love you guys. I'm going to listen out to the rest of the show. Nick, Joe, and everybody else, man. Love you guys, all right?
Thank you, Jerry. We love you, too. We appreciate the support. As always, fantastic call. Always positivity from Jerry. Joe, what do you think about this? Especially
yep.
The idea that after this season, a lot of these players, I mean, Marcus Morris is one guy that I'm just really going to be upset to see go if he does go. Any chance you think any of these guys take a discount to stick with the Boston Celtics, or do you think they're all out the door?
So I'll take the first one first. Do I see these guys moving along after this season? If they continue down the path they're on, absolutely. I mean, depends on where this team ends up. You know, does this team end up out in four games in the NBA Finals? Does it get to the Eastern Conference? Is it bounced in a divisional? You know, where does this team finish? And then I can have a better idea as to where some of these guys' psyche might be. But if we're talking about a Morris and he continues to have a career year this year, his value is going to be maxed out. He's going to – this is the NBA. It's a business. You know, the fans are the heart of this league. But the players understand that it's a business. They're chasing dollars. They're going to chase the best opportunity out there for them that's going to set them up long-term financially.
Yep.
I mean, and you can't fault them for it because, hey, they have the God-given ability to play a sport at a level that you and I can only dream about, hopefully do a
they
decent job
their
analyzing.
Bodies. They sacrifice
Absolutely.
Their bodies. The other ones making the sacrifices with their bodies. Even in basketball, they sacrifice their bodies. Isn't a basketball player that doesn't have some nagging injury throughout his career and then faces, you know, the repercussions of that afterwards? Now, it's even, I mean, 10 times worse probably with football, I'd imagine. I mean, without a doubt, the CTE thing is horrifying. But, I mean, that they're not exempt from that either. Al Horford has dealt with concussions in his career, as Boston Celtics fans know quite well. So they're the ones that sacrificed their body. You can't fault them for that.
Absolutely, I'm not one of the analysts that you'll. Yeah, I'm not one of the analysts that you'll hear out there that ever picks on an athlete for getting as much as they can get going wherever they have to go to get it. I mean, I can date it back to personal history as far back as say, you know, Curtis Martin going to the Jets. You know what I mean? That's a money grab.
Mm-hmm.
I got it. I understood it. I hated to see the guy go because of what he did for the Patriots. But, I got it at the end of the day. I mean, he's protecting himself. He's setting himself, his family, and generations of his family up financially. So yeah, I'll never fault that. One thing I did want to circle back to, though, is when Jerry was going off on all of his different points, one of the points he brought up regarding the Houston game kind of jumped out at me because I didn't I wanted to go back and look at the box score. The Celtics weren't really just throwing threes up. They shot 31 three-point shots during that Houston Rockets game. Tonight, by comparison, they shot 36. It's kind of right around where their season average is. And like it or not, you know, whether you like it, Nick, I don't know. I know I don't particularly care. It's just a style of the play. But the three-point game is the game. That is the game now. This is
analytics.
You know, you can look at the Golden State model. Yeah, look at the Golden State model. Take a look at Houston. Why do you think these teams throw up 40-plus three-pointers on a regular basis? Because they're going to hit about 45% of them on a good night and about 38% on a bad night. And to them, they'd rather that odds than constantly going down, running set plays, hoping to get a nice jumper. They'd rather just take the three ball. And, hey, I can't fault them for it, specifically when you look at the way some of these teams are designed and built. They're putting these players that are these type of specialists in high-profile roles in their starting five and off their bench. This is what the NBA is, you know. It's not the grinded-out 80s and 90s. You know, this game now is a three-point game. It's wide open. Defense is an afterthought. So when you get the Celtics playing a decent form of defense while still being able to hang with these high-scoring teams, that's when you know you have a dangerous team. And I think we do. It's just going to be a matter of when that team puts together a solid opening-to-ending bell game. And we just haven't seen that. Sans, maybe the Toronto game was about as close as it's gotten so far this season. I would just like to see one or two blowout games where it just seems like everything's clicking and you're seeing that scary team that we all read about leading into this season.
Yeah. You know, I miss the Jeff Van Gundy dangling off of Alonzo Mourning's leg in the middle of a melee between, you know, the Miami Heat and the New York Knicks in the playoffs, you know, or maybe even from your generation, a Bill Laimbeer, you know, clothesline, or, you know, Larry Bird in Dr. J getting into a fist fight, or maybe one of the dirtier ones. Definitely don't miss the Kermit Washington, Rudy Tomjanovich choking on their own spinal fluid. I mean, you know, there were some things that are a little bit too, you know, too grimy to celebrate, but, you know, or maybe the Detroit, Indiana, that was the one that was defined, you know, my youth as, you know, the NBA, you know,
where
it kind of, yeah, switched the NBA to becoming, you know, super duper soft. Not that it wasn't already moving in that direction anyway, because as a youth, I remember the, you know, as a youth from an, you know, inner city or urban environment, remember that, you know, the outcry that the dress code after the games, you know, cause. And now the NBA players are a lot more free to, you know, speak out about, you know, are free to dress the way they want to. There's still a dress code, but it's kind of relaxed. I don't even know if maybe there isn't a dress code anymore. But I remember the under David Stern, a lot of the things that happened late 90s and early 2000s to kind of turn the NBA into what it is. And now the NBA is, you know, this you know, type of style, and I mean it's a finesse, you know, more than I think, you know, a gritty grinded out style of basketball game. But I think the Celtics' ability to be gritty and grinded out is what's going to differentiate them from a lot of the other elite teams, because I think a lot of those teams like the Houston Rockets, I don't think they have that, you know, that sixth gear, so to speak, when it comes to you know breaking down, getting in that, you know, that seated position and you know, playing, you know, the, you know, real lockdown, cramp them up defense. I don't think, you know, a lot of these elite teams necessarily have that capacity, have that ability. And the Boston Celtics do, as we already mentioned. You know, in this game, you know, coming down from 19, you're not just, you know, blowing teams out of the water with, you know, with your shooting or with your, you know, your scoring in that situation. A lot of that had to do with them getting down into their defensive things, getting into their defensive stance, a defensive mindset, and forcing turnovers, finally grabbing those rebounds, securing those rebounds, and not letting guys sitting on the floor like Michael Conley, you know, out-rebound you or get, you know, get inside position, you know what I mean? If that's what's going to set the Boston Celtics apart from, you know, some of these other elite teams, because they're all shooting threes. I think Brad Stevens, when the team is clicking, when they're on, when they're focused, when they're tuned in, they can hit threes with anybody, and I think Brad Stevens is as good a coach at opening up, you know, those type of shots, getting good looks, running plays to get his players good looks. And I think that was always the intention of this Celtics lineup, was, you know, two things. the manifestation of this Boston Celtics lineup coming into the season, the expectation of the Celtics lineup, you know, coming into the season were two things. One, that the Celtics, you know, their starting lineup, as it used to be, which was, you know, Al Horford, Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown, and Kyrie Irving, all of them could shoot from downtown. Every single one of them was a threat to spread the floor. Every one of them could shoot, you know, respectably enough to force defenders to play them outside, which could then, obviously, it's an inverted game now. You shoot outside, and then if a basket opens up with a cutter or somebody, you know, off the pick and roll getting inside, the better you shoot outside, the more open the interior gets, whereas it used to be the interior generated the shots on the perimeter, and it's inverted now. And then the other thing being everybody on defense pretty much being able to switch defensively on everybody else. Those are the two, like, key linchpins of this Boston Celtics team that made them unique. So the fact that they're shooting threes, I agree with you on that. The fact that they're shooting this amount of threes, it shouldn't be surprising to anyone because that's the way the team was constructed. Although I think, as I mentioned earlier, and I don't know if you would agree with or disagree, there are just times when you have to take the basket. You have to run those plays, especially in the playoffs when the game slows down, where you have to break it down. You have to run those plays, and you can't just chuck those threes. There's sometimes where you have to take it to the basket, and I think tonight was one of those nights where they proved it because this team won on defense and won on, you know, even though Al Horford hit some very big threes, even though the three was a part of what they were doing to come back from, you know, 19 points, especially there in the second half of the fourth quarter. You know, what really spurred that, what really got it going, was Kyrie Irving driving to the basket and hitting some, you know, critical shots. Marcus Morris going to the basket, either getting fouled or hitting those demoralizing, you know, pull-up, you know, shots that are contested but go in anyway. Those are the things that got the Boston Celtics back into the groove and set up shots like the Al Horford. I mean, Kyrie Irving drew three defenders on that second Al Horford three, the wide open Al Horford three.
Oh, yeah.
From, I believe, the right wing it was, right or left wing. I don't remember which one it was. But set
just
up Al Horford from
key.
That three. The left of the key, just left of the key, for facing the basket, right? So left of the key, you know, set up that shot because he drew three defenders, you know, trying to trap him, trying to, you know, stop his dribble, trying to get him in. And Al Horford drained that shot. That's what the Celtics team is built around. But there's still that defensive aspect, and I think the ability to break it down into that old-school style of game when need be is what's going to differentiate the Boston Celtics, the ability to run set plays behind a mastermind like Brad Stevens, who I think has probably taken a little bit of a hit maybe in his, you know, in the esteem that he's gotten throughout the league with the way the Boston Celtics have kind of underperformed with what many consider to be one of the most stacked rosters in the league. But he's a mastermind. He's still the best coach in the league, in my opinion, but anyways.
Oh yeah. No, I'll take that point. I'll expand on it, and then I got a trivia question for you. But let's start with Brad Stevens and his reputation taking a hit, or his esteem taking a hit. I think if it is, you would have to monetize it, Nick, as people are now at least questioning. You know what I mean? He's had such a great ride over the last five seasons where people just allow whatever Brad's doing to do because it's working, and you're seeing the progress season over season from these guys, from the team's development, player development, and then the overall record. I think, to your point, with this team on paper coming into this year, plus this coach, you had higher expectations for this team. You didn't expect this team to be a 21-win team at this point in the season. You expected them to be a 26, 27 win team, and they probably feel a little bit better about it. I think if anything, people are at least looking and asking the question. We'll see how it plays out as the course of the season goes, because like tonight, if you've learned anything from watching basketball, like tonight, it was the tale of two games and two halves. You know, if I'd only watched the first half of that game and then shut it off, I'd have told you that might have been Phoenix. That might have been an 8-win team right there. But then when you see the final and your Boston Celtics win 112-103 over the Memphis Grizzlies tonight, you think to yourself, man, they must have played really, really well. It was just a tale of two different games. But speaking of Al, because you did bring Al up, I got a trivia question for you, my man.
I'll try my best.
All right. How many players on the court tonight were part of that 2007 Super Draft that saw Kevin Durant go number two?
don't know. I'm going to say either just Al Horford, since you mentioned Al Horford, or a whole lot of players. I don't know who else was in that draft. Was Marcus Gasol wasn't in that draft, was he?
Yes, he was. He was taken 48th overall. But that's the best part about this. You ready for this? Al Horford,
Joakim Noah. Wasn't Joakim Noah part of that draft as well?
Yes.
I hate, you know, that really disappointed me. I turned on this game streaming so I could watch the NBC Sports Boston down here in Florida, my second home, and my only home now, but you know, since moving from New Bedford, the south coast of Mass, and I see Joakim Noah, I'm like, why is this guy, old man Noah, why is he on my screen? I remember being a young man when he won the back-to-back NCAA championships with the Florida Gators, who I hate, by the way. You mentioned the Seminoles and the Gators in text, and I absolutely can't stand the Gators. I'm not a Seminoles fan. I went to the University of South Florida, and I cheer for our joke of a football team, the South Florida Bulls. But, you know, that's okay. We've won some big games in the past, just in a rough spot right now. We get confused often with the Central Florida Knights, the UCF Knights, who actually get to play in nice bowl games against, you know,
yes,
solid teams instead of terrible bowl games like we play. But I digress. I remember watching him, and he would prance around campus. And I guess being in Florida, you get to see, you know, some of those, you know, social media things that, as the birth of social media, I guess, began, so did the birth of Joakim Noah and Al Horford, who was always the laid-back kind of guy on that team. There was a couple of, I think, Corey Brewer was another guy on that team, the 2007 Gator National Champion team. But Joakim Noah,
there was
one moment after winning, I think, I don't know if it was the SEC tournament or one of the games in the Final Four, where he did a dance on the court that was just the most obscene thing I'd ever seen. If my son was alive, I have an 8-year-old son. If my son was alive at that time, I would have told him to cover his eyes, because it was just the ugliest thing I'd ever seen. Joakim Noah is just a really abhorrent human being. I just don't like seeing him on my computer screen, my TV screen. It's like I feel like he's going to break the glass on my iPad when I see him pop up on the stream. I'm just not a Joakim Noah guy. But anyways, how many players, were on that 2007 Super Draft?
It was a total of four players on the court tonight. You had Al Horford, Mike Conley.
I was going to say Mike Conley was the last one. I was good. Okay.
They went 3-4 in that draft.
Wow.
Al went 3. Wow. Conley went 4. Then you had Gasol at 48. And you had Joakim Noah, number 9.
I remember he was a high pick. And he was one of those guys that – you hated to play against for specifically the reasons that I mentioned. He used to always be one of those guys shouting, yelling. But he was a guy, I mean, not to compare him to, you know, many of our Celtics fans, and I've always been a fan of Marcus Smart throughout his entire career. I've never said a bad word about Marcus Smart ever. He's kind of one of those type of guys that if he's not playing for your team, you hate him. I don't know of anybody that likes Marcus Smart is not a Boston Celtics fan.
No.
There's some honest fans that'll say, yeah, I'd love to have him on my team, but nobody will cheer for Marcus Smart. Like, this is a guy that I like if you're not a Boston Celtics fan, because he does the things that he does for the Boston Celtics frequently at the expense of whatever your favorite team is. And Joakim Noah used to be a guy that was like that. So the fact that he went, would you say, 9
absolutely
in that draft? Yeah,
he went 9.
I think he kind of deserved that. I'm not mad at Joakim Noah being, you know, 9th in that pick or in that draft. So we do have
there
another caller.
Of,
I wasn't paying attention.
Couple,
I was neglecting the switchboard. But finish up with the draft, Joe, because I like to be educated
by
those that have.
I'm just looking at it. I'm looking at it and I'm giggling because the top player picked in 2007 was probably the NBA's biggest bust in the last, I don't know, 15 years. Greg Oden went number 1.
Greg Oden, the Kevin Durant, yes.
Yes, and then your Boston Celtics took Jeff Green with the number 5 pick.
Yep. Wasn't that?
Yeah,
Oden
and his microfractures in his knees.
Jeff Green was a trade to the Sonics for Ray Allen, wasn't he? That was the way that one shook out. My memory is not so great. You have a better memory than I do. My memory, I mean, I remember these things happening.
No, I have Wikipedia and a good phone.
I've burnt myself out. It's a little bit of burnout on my end, but once we start talking about it, it jogs my memory. Yeah, and those players were actually, surprisingly, 11 years later, they were still effective on the court. I mean, Marcus had a good game. Mike Conley had a fantastic game. I mean, he dueled, you know, basically,
absolutely,
you know, head-to-head with Kyrie Irving. And, well, I mean, Joakim Noah did whatever Joakim Noah does. I refuse to even look at the box score to see what his contribution was. That's how odious I find Joakim Noah to be. And with that, let's go back to the Boston Barber and Tattoo Company toll-free call lines, 347-215-7771. And we have the 860 area code. I think I know who this is, and if it is, we're in for a fantastic call. 860, you're live on the air.
Hey, Nick, Paul from Connecticut. How are you?
What's up, Paul from Connecticut? How you doing?
Good, good, good. So I, like you, here in Middletown, Connecticut, do not get Celtics games on NBC Sports Boston. So
you must get
the New York
Metro trash, huh?
yeah, I have MSG and YES and SNY, but the Celtics games are blocked out here. So
I'm sorry. Have you blocked those channels
yet? I'm catching up through the highlights and watching the interviews and the post game right now. But you know, I've been calling in a lot and talking about Hayward a lot, and looks like he had a pretty good game tonight. From
yes,
what
sir.
I'm seeing,
14 points,
and
4 boards, 3 assists, I think.
I was looking at Paul George's stats after he got injured, and it looked like it took him about 30 games or so to get back into his groove, if you will. So I'm hoping this Hayward game is the beginning of some consistency for him at this point, and it's not an aberration like we saw with that Minnesota game. What do you guys think about that? You think he can keep
Nick,
going
you want
from
that?
There?
How about you, Joe? I'll let you have that one.
All right. Well, I mentioned it earlier. I'll mention it again, and I'll mention it probably until March. All I'm looking for out of Gordon Hayward are incremental improvements in his game, game over game, week over week, 2 week cycle over 2 week cycle, month over month. That's what I'm looking for from him. And to your point, you know, Paul George came back and was kind of hitting his stride about 30 games in. As similar as injuries can be, no two are exactly the same. And one thing I'll say is when Paul George comes back to a team, he's needed far more than the way this team's currently comprised. So Gordon Hayward can take his time, so to speak, and really find that rhythm, which is why you see him coming off the bench now. And I think he will for a good while now. Until he kind of really sets a tone. And once he does, and once his play is consistent, then I see him being a major contributor on this team. But, you know, to your point, I'm not looking for a breakout game from him right now. What I'm looking for are incremental increases to his current health status, and game speed status. Those are the three major points I'm looking at. How about you, Nick?
Yeah, and I think that your point about no two injuries being the same, and I know that Paul George is a very similar one, but I believe Paul George is a break somewhere more in the middle of his lower leg. Not sure what that bone is called. I didn't do so well in anatomy and physiology, but I did get my BA,
we'll just call
so
it
you, know,
the
you can't hold it against. Yeah, that one. Gordon Hayward had injury to a joint. You know, like that was, you know, even though it was a leg fracture and there was no tendon or soft tissue damage, it was still, you know, so close to that joint that, you know, there's no way to really tell. But again, you know, I think that the point that you made, Joe, about being able to bring him back, you know, slowly, you know, the incremental improvements, I think, is a luxury the Boston Celtics have with their depth, and I think they're doing the right thing because clearly Gordon Hayward, and as Paul was in Connecticut was saying, you know, is this a game that we can point to and say this is, you know, Gordon Hayward, you know, really breaking out? And there have been, you know, post game shows where I've covered games where, you know, Gordon Hayward, I think he had 29 points. I covered that game, and I said this is where we're really seeing Gordon Hayward breaking out, and it's not going to be a game really where you see, you know, Gordon Hayward breaking out. It's really going to be games where, you know, you look back on the box scores and you say, hey, he had, you know, you know, 12 points in this game and then 15 points in this game and 13 points this game and then 20 points in this game. And he's had, you know, a sequence of, you know, double-figure games where he really factored into, you know, the Boston Celtics' success. And it won't be something where we can, you know, really pinpoint on the map, this is Gordon Hayward. It's going to be, you know, he's going to hit his stride and we're going to look back and say, wow, you know, Gordon Hayward's really been playing well. But I don't know if this game before even, you know, 2019, you know, in late December is going to be the game. I would like it to be, you know, and that's, you know, not taking anything away from Paul and Connecticut's point. I'd like it to be, I'd love it to be, but I've seen, you know, I've seen this, I've heard this song before. You know what I mean? We've seen, you know, Gordon Hayward do it, and I think, you know, have fantastic games. I think I mentioned with you, Joe, that, you know, we've seen Gordon Hayward have games where it looks like he's coming back, and then he'll have, you know, several stinkers or several, you know, non-impactful performances, you know, after that, and then have another good game, and then he's had maybe about, you know, three or four, now we can say maybe five or six of those type of performances so far this season. So that's where I stand on Gordon Hayward. I agree with Joe Chiquette completely. You know, that's why he is the, you know, one of the geniuses here at CLNS Media, the great, the better in that, the analyst here at CLNS Media. I agree completely. It's an incremental thing. And I'm not sure we're going to, in my opinion, I'm not sure we're going to see a particular game. That 29-point game, which was the season high, and then he had, I think, a season high in rebounds and assists, it was like a season high across the board, that would have been the game. But it wasn't. So I think, you know, as long as we see incremental, as Joe Chiquette says, improvement,
absolutely,
you take it kind of as a, you know, as a whole, as opposed to, you know, any individual game, you kind of look at, you know, weeks, months, as Joe said, that's what we're going to see from Gordon Hayward. And as long as you're getting consistently, you know, double-figure scoring, you know, four or five rebounds, two, three assists a night, you know, and then, you know, decent shooting from, you know, behind the arc from Gordon Hayward somewhere around, you know, March and April. That's when we know, yeah, this is Gordon Hayward. Now, if Gordon Hayward is still having, you know, one good game every, you know, five or ten games, you know, come, you know, April, then we can sit back and say, well, you know, when is Gordon Hayward, you know, going to, you know, put his, you know, pedal to the metal and really get it going? Are we really ever going to see, you know, the same Gordon Hayward again? But right now, you know, in December, almost January, I'm not mad at it. Yes, sir.
Yeah, no, one of the things that I'll further that just a little bit further. So say you're a fan, you want to watch these Celtics continue throughout the winter and into the spring, and you're specifically looking to see when is Gordon Hayward going to be Gordon Hayward again. I can basically spell it out for everybody that sits on the couch and watches this team or gets the stream. When the offense starts pouring through Gordon Hayward when he's on the court is when you know he's back. That's really one of the keys to watch when you're watching this player come back from the injury that he had, and he's finding that comfort on the court. When the ball starts flowing through Gordon Hayward possession after possession after possession for the minutes that he's in, whether it's 20 minutes, whether it's 15, whether it's 29 minutes in a game, watch the flow of the ball through Gordon Hayward. Whether he's scoring or facilitating, that's where you're going to notice, hey, the Celtics trust Gordon Hayward now. He's back because Brad's running the offense through him. You know, that's when I'm going to start
fantastic
going,
point.
Okay, he's back. So that's just my 2 points. So if I'm sitting on the couch and I'm watching the game, I'm waiting for that ball to start flowing through Gordon Hayward every minute he's on the court. That I just wanted to further that a little bit further.
The one positive I take from it is Marcus Morris has really stepped into that role and stepped up.
Love
big.
Marcus.
I mean, that guy looked like an all-star.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Marcus Morris is making $5 million or something like that. And, Nick, you guys were talking about possible trades a show or two ago. And I hope Ainge keeps this roster together for the entire playoff run. There's a lot of talent on this roster, and if two, three guys aren't playing well, they can still go a very long way. Even if you lose Rozier for nothing, I don't want to have nightmares of the Perkins trade again. I know it's not the same thing,
right?
But
yeah.
I don't want to go through a Jeff Green situation. So, Nick, what are your thoughts on that? You think they should hold it together? I know you were saying maybe Rozier needs to be moved. Other people, some ESPN guy was saying Jaylen Brown and Rozier to the Suns. I don't know. I kind of want to see this 8-9-man roster experiment go through one season at least. I mean, we've only seen 30 games of these guys. they could turn it on. You guys think, are you in favor of them keeping the team together, or do you think, I guess, less is more?
Joe, you can go ahead and take that one. I know he asked me. I'll get back to you.
I'm champing at the bit on this one because I have a slightly different take.
I heard you, so I said, Joe, go ahead, Joe. Get him.
So in regards to keeping the band together for the season, I think ideally if you could crawl into the head of Danny Ainge and ask him what he'd prefer to do, he'd prefer to hang on to all of the possible capital he has available to him for the entire season. I don't even have to tell you why. I'll just give you two letters, AD. That's exactly why he wants to hang on to every piece of valuable merchandise he has until this season ends. Is that a reality? That is the better question, because can he hang on to all of these assets throughout the year? When does a failing Terry Rozier or a failing Jaylen Brown, and I know that's sacrilege, Nick, but I had to throw it out there, he becomes an available player that could be moved. So at that point, when does Danny, to your point, caller, when does he make the call as to whether or not I hang on to what I got and I enter the sweepstakes pretty heavy-handed? Or do I look to this year and see what I can do to best the team for the remainder of the season? That's why he gets paid the big bucks and I just get to watch it on TV. But that's my take on that one. Nick, where are you on it?
Well, you know, if we start to see, you know, and there is a trade deadline, and it's coming up, you know, fairly, I believe it's in February is when the trade deadline is. So it's not like, you know, there's unlimited time to make the trade or not make the trade. And I do believe there's some type of exclusion that, you know, that prevents Anthony Davis from being traded to the Celtics unless Kyrie Irving is part of that trade. It was called the Rose Rule. I don't know the exact specifics of it because there comes a point, you know, in NBA basketball, and some of the CLNS analysts are a lot better at, you know, these type of salary cap things than I am when it comes to those specific details. The Rose Rule, something I never heard of before, but it apparently prevents AD from being traded to the Celtics right now. So my opinion about a trade, I like what Paul says. I think that you can, and Joe as well, if you're looking at it either in terms of players and their, you know, value on the court, or capital in terms of, you know, possible, you know, trade scenarios at some point. Danny Ainge keeping this group together, I think once the team is actually playing the way you expect them to play, and that's what we as Boston Celtics fans kind of have to expect, you know, that at some point this Boston Celtics team will be able to flip the switch and start playing, you know, when it matters, start playing, you know, effective basketball. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to see Marcus Morris go anywhere. If in an ideal world the Boston Celtics would be able to play Marcus Morris or pay Marcus Morris in the offseason and keep him here. In reality, is that going to happen? Probably not, because someone's going to offer him, you know, high double figures to get him away from the Boston Celtics, and he's going to have every right and every, you know, authority to do that, to just walk right out the door. Same with Terry Rozier. To Joe's point, however, if there comes a point, you know, the next couple of months before the trade deadline, you see Jaylen Brown still hasn't turned it on. You see Terry Rozier still hasn't adapted to his position or to his new role on this team, coming off the bench and not being the guy that, you know, last season was Scary Terry, who replaced, you know, Kyrie Irving in the starting lineup and was cooking Drew Bledsoe in the playoffs. If he, you know, starts looking like he's really not that guy, and, you know, Jaylen Brown, you know, starts looking like he's really taking a step back to a point where, you know, maybe he can't, you know, be, you know, resurrected from, you know, from whatever position. And I don't really see that happening. But if that happens, then you're talking about having to get rid of these guys almost for a fire sale type situation, or they start losing value, and then you don't really get what you want out of them anyway. It may be, you know, better just to, I mean, in Rozier's case, he's probably going to walk regardless. And Jaylen Brown, you still have him for another season. At which point, you know, why trade him for nothing when you can have, you know, what he does contribute for another season? And I don't think any – I think this is so far out in the weeds. I haven't been a huge proponent of trades or trade talk unless the right guy comes around, unless there's some way to figure out how to get Anthony Davis, you know, in a green uniform before this summer, unless there's, you know, something that comes around. I know – in certain circles, getting that the big dude from Orlando Magic. You know, pardon me, the big white guy, Vucevic, I think is his name, or Vujicic. I don't know when it comes to those type of names. What Nikola Vujicic, is that what his name is, Vucevic? The big dude, he had like a 20-10-8 game just the other day, the guy from Orlando that plays in Orlando. There's, you know, maybe trading for a guy like him that can also spread the floor, he can help the rebounding situation. But I'm not huge on imaginary trades or proposing who needs to go. I still think that each of these players on this team can adapt to their role and, you know, be impactful at it, both Terry Rozier and Jaylen Brown being guys that, you know, apparently are getting, you know, the short end of the stick in most of these conversations. So to answer your question, Paul,
Nick,
I'm not a huge proponent of
four draft picks coming up. Don't we have 3 or 4 draft picks this next year? So if we lose Rozier for nothing, we have a lot of picks. We have a ton of assets already. So let this – that's why I think it's best to keep the team intact. Like I said, it's only been 20, 30 games, and see what kind of run they can put together. They're still building chemistry as the season goes, and we have a lot of top-end talent. So top-end talent wins in the NBA. So I think come playoff time, I think we're going to be a force to be reckoned with. And Gordon Hayward's my key, man. You know that. I've been talking about him since – we got knocked out of the playoffs last year by Cleveland. Him integrating and scoring 12 to 15 points a game and being in the flow is the key. I know points aren't everything, stats aren't everything, but he's the missing piece. I really believe that. Nick, great talking to you as always. I'm sure you guys have other callers. Other Joe, I think it is, right?
Yeah.
Yes, sir, Joe Shikin.
Joe, thanks for your time. Always enjoy talking about the team with you guys. And have a great New Year, guys.
Awesome. Have a great night.
Fantastic. Happy New Year, Paul in Connecticut, a frequent caller. I haven't heard from him lately on any of my shows, but it's good to know that he's listening and that he's able to remember some of the things that we say on this show. sometimes the things that I say aren't worth remembering, but, you know, it bees like that sometimes. The clock is ticking down on us, Joe. Any last thoughts about, you know, the game, the Celtics in general, that you'd like to get out there before we say our goodbyes for the evening? We had a wonderful list of callers. The Boston Celtics won 112 to 103 in Memphis, getting back into the win column after a brutal game in Houston, getting abused on the boards, getting abused by Clint Capella, and, of course, getting cooked in a cook-off by James Harden, coming back in Memphis and having another cook-off with Michael Conley. But, of course, Kyrie Irving, you know, even though Conley had a decent game, I think, you know, you can't take away from what Kyrie Irving did tonight. He just kind of fell asleep for half of the game and then decided, hey, I feel like playing right now, and, you know, put the Celtics on his back, and it kind of, you know, Marcus Morris and Al Horford followed suit and really, you know, did their thing in the closing minutes. Anything you'd like to close the show out with, Joe? Any profound thoughts, any, you know, deep analysis about the Boston Celtics? Any more reflections on our callers, Jerry and Paul tonight? Giving us some
yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah, no, I'll take a W as a W, which we said early on and right from the onset. Any day that ends in Y, I'll take a win. I didn't get much out of the game from an overall like season building block perspective. I'd like to see what we get out of them on the against the Spurs on Monday. Just keep watching. That's the best part. We're in the doldrums of winter. The back half of the first half of an NBA season. This is, you know, beat the teams you should beat, be competitive against the teams that you're evenly matched against, and at least stand your, you know, give yourself a chance if you're outclassed. That's all you can hope for right now. Now watch your players, look for individual development game over game, week over week, and bye week over bye week, and just continue to take a look. And last but not least, let's pray that the Patriots win tomorrow. They beat the Jets. They secure the number 2 seed. And then we get a first run by, and all these national analysts can stop haunting me on the radio day in and day out.
I was going to squeeze the New England Patriots reference in there myself. You know, I know that earlier in the season it was Red Sox life, and then now, you know, it's getting to the end of the NFL season, and it's all about the Patriots in Boston. So the Celtics are kind of sneaking under the radar right now. They're just, you know, as I've said multiple times on the show, you probably heard me say it, Joe, it's maintenance mode.
Absolutely.
For guys like Al Horford, who are old, or guys like Gordon Hayward coming off injury, and Kyrie Irving, who, you know, I'm sure he absolutely looks like he's recovered from, you know, his from having the plates in his knee removed. But you know, it's still you don't need these guys to be playing balls out and, you know, breaking records in December. You need these guys, you know, doing that in, you know, in April and May and June. You need them to, you know, to play that way when the playoffs come around. You need them to get in the stride. You don't want them to peak too early because, you know, peaking, you know, it happens in basketball as well. You want them to be playing their best basketball, you know, well after the new year. So we got some, you know, fantastic games. Is this going to be a game that we can, like, as you said, Joe, that we can, you know, put a, you know, a mark in it, stick a flag in it and say this is where the Boston Celtics season, you know, really, you know, turned around and hit its stride, or this is where, you know, XYZ player, you know, really, you know, turned it on and did their thing? No, I think that, you know, that game is going to come and we won't even probably realize it when it happens, because the key thing the Boston Celtics need right now is consistency. They need to do this consistently and not, you know, win 8 games and then lose, you know, 3 of the next 4. That's, you know, you need the Boston Celtics to, you know, start having, you know, consecutive games where they win by double figures, or where they, are impressive, and you have consecutive games where, you know, these players that we have questions about, whether it's Gordon Hayward or whether it's Jaylen Brown or Terry Rozier, where they have games that, you know, convince you, that are convincing games in a row consecutively. And that's the thing the Boston Celtics need to convince everybody is consistency. And again, like Joe Chiquette said, we hope the New England Patriots win tomorrow, secure that second seed, and hopefully make it through the playoffs with home court advantage. The next game, don't know when it is. You know when the next game is, Joe? I know it's against the San Antonio Spurs. Don't know who the hosts are.
On Monday, New Year's Eve.
The San Antonio Spurs, and it will be in San Antonio, will be your next game. Make sure to tune in after that game to hear all the best analysis from the CLNS media staff. As I mentioned, don't know who the hosts are, but you can guarantee whoever they are, they will be fantastic and break down all of the action from the game against the Spurs in San Antonio. Once again, the Boston Celtics winning tonight, 112-103 over the Memphis Grizzlies in the FedEx Forum. We would like to thank our sponsors, Boston Barber and Tattoo, for making this show possible. For my co-host, Joe Chiquette, I am Nick Sicento, and for all of the CLNS Media Boston Celtics staff, thank you for tuning in, and Happy New Year. Be safe, everyone.
Happy New Year, guys.
Internet Sports Talk Radio, CLNS Radio.